League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
By the fans, for the fans, welcome to the Non-League Football Show. I am once again Tim Fuel, dragging you through another episode of the original and still the leading Non-League Football podcast in the world. This week, thankfully, I have a partner in crime. He needs no introduction, simply because we've introduced him so often on this show that I haven't got much in the way of variation to add. He's former manager at AFC Wimbledon, Hendon, Northwood, Harrow, and everywhere else in the world, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining me. It was a bit lonely last week.
Yeah, no, that was my fault. I had some issues, as you know. I had a vehicle breakdown and I had to jump ship at the last minute, which isn't like me, as you know. So my apologies. Well, my apologies. People were probably delighted.
You had a ship breakdown as well, did you? Well, since you were last with us, Dave, it's quite a lot's happened in the world of non-league. But even since last week's recording, there's been stuff going on. Transfer deadline day, it came and went last Thursday evening. All seemed a bit quiet until the early hours of Friday morning. And news that striker extraordinaire Dave Tarpey had finally been given his chance of pro football with Division 2 Barnet. No surprise there then, really, Dave.
No. I was surprised it took so long. I was surprised that no one sort of took a gamble before Barnet did. I think, you know, listen, every signing in football is a gamble to a degree. I think it's a great signing. I think a goal scorer scores goals. He'll score goals for Barnet. He'll only get sharper, fitter. He's a little bit older now, and I think that'll help him because he'll grab it with both hands. You know, when you get to an age where you think you're not going to get your second chance to be pro, and it comes along. So I expect him to do well. And alongside one of my old centre-forwards, funny enough, Simeon Akinola, who had at Harrow, who went from, thinking, was it Braintree to Barnet? I might be mistaken, but is also at Barnet as well. So, you can't knock the goals he scored, Tim. And as I say, my only surprise is it took so long.
You said about Barnet leaving it late to sign him, but then he went straight in the side that won at Swindon last weekend. So it looks like he's not going to just be a bit part player. They bought him to play him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's brave to a degree. You know, it's brave to bring someone out of non-league, albeit it's only a division below where they are, but each division's a big step. But why not? You know, why not sort of, instead of hanging on and building the thing into being where he waits a couple of weeks and it becomes a big issue, put him in the team, give him some experience, see how he does and what he makes of it. And I always say that, listen, centre-forwards, in today's football, in any football, you have to work as a group of players, you know, especially defensively when the other team's got the ball. But if you're ever going to take a chance with someone who's not up to speed in team shape, then it's a centre-forward. Just tell him to go and do what he does. And when they get the ball, can you fall into this position and keep it nice and basic for him? So, I think it's brave, but I also think it's the right thing.
Yeah, it's a great move for non-league, you know, the reputation of non-league, and great for the player. But what about Maidenhead United? You know, they're a month in, they lose their best striker, and one as prolific and influential as Tarpey. Can he be replaced at this stage?
Well, you'd have to say they're not struggling, are they? You'd have to say that, you know, can he be replaced? It's an awful lot of goals to replace. Let's be perfectly honest. If you get a goal scorer who scores 25 goals in a season, it's hard to replace him. What did Tarpey score last year? 50? 40? Late 40s, was it?
Yeah. I don't think I had enough numbers on my calculator. Certainly didn't have enough fingers. Yeah.
So it's a big one to replace. But, you know, they're in a playoff position. Listen, we're 8 games in. But Maidenhead have come up a division and are in a playoff position in the National League. So I would say at the moment they're okay. I'm sure Ireland will want to strengthen when the window opens again. But it's, everybody says it's not about one man. It will be difficult to replace his goals, but I would imagine the squad at Maidenhead will be fine. They'll be okay without him.
You say about the great start that Maidenhead have made in that National League. We used to discuss about the difference between the clubs that made it up into the Football League, and there wasn't a great difference after they made it out of the National League into the Football League. But it seems similar now with the clubs that are coming straight out of National North and National South and going into the National League. It's there's still perhaps the have and have nots, but then you look at the table at the moment. You've got bottom four of the National League at the moment: Chester, Solihull, Moors, Guiseley and Torquay United. You know, some big names there. You know, Hartlepool United just above them. You know, everybody's tipped for Tranmere. They're in 18th.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So the strength of non-league is you know, probably at its highest ever, potentially.
Well, I would say so because I used to say that the two biggest jumps in football were from the Championship into the Premiership and from the National League, as it's called now, into the Football League. I always thought they were the biggest steps, but sorry, beg your pardon, Tim, from the sort of Conference South and North into the National League were the biggest steps, because most of the Conference, as we know it, was full time. North and South, whoever went up into the National League had to deal with that, and it's a step forward in fitness and strength and organization and travel and all that sort of stuff. And I always thought it was a massive step, but these guys are now sort of getting in and not, they're not going to win it, but they're certainly comfortable within the environment very, very quickly.
But with that comes added pressure, doesn't it? I think the fourth managerial casualty of the National League, and we're only just into September, John McCarthy going at Chester. I said they're fourth from bottom. No win at home since December. They've lost the last three. He had signed a 2.5-year deal in January, and the club appeared to have parted on good terms with him. On their official statement said that he was a thoroughly decent man who could not have worked harder to try and deliver success. But another manager goes, and you know, he'd signed a 2.5-year deal in January. Does he get a payoff of 2.5 years, and he goes and twiddles his thumbs now?
If he gets a payoff of 2.5 years, I would wanted him to do every contract I ever signed. I don't think he'll get 2.5-year payoff. He will get a payoff. It depends what he's negotiated. On my own personal level, mine, any contract I signed was stated that wherever I was within the league, there would be a percentage of the payoff, Tim, if you know. So if it was in the top six and I got the sack, then I would want the whole 2.5 years. But if it was in the bottom four, then obviously that figure would drop sort of drastically. No one ever wants to see a manager out of work, especially a decent guy like he is. But you'd also have to say the way the results were, it was understandable. It wasn't a massive shock.
I mean, we are only 8 games in, but you know, 7 points from those 8 games, that's just too few, isn't it, when there's so much at risk?
Yes, it is. And going on the end of last season, then it'll have snowballed it. And I'd imagine some, like Chester, will feel like, I'm sure every club in every league feels, but the Chester board and supporters will feel that they should be top half comfortably.
So one of the newest members of the non-league community this season is Leighton Orient. We touched upon their off-the-field issues at the end of last season. You may remember that very emotional interview with then-manager Omar Risa. Well, a new broom over the summer, new owners, new director of football, new manager and a whole new experience for O's fans. So how's it all going? To give us an idea, Matt Porter, non-executive director at the club, joins us on the line. Good evening, Matt.
Good evening, guys.
Hiya, Matt.
Well, second in the table after 8 games on goal difference, is that better than you expected?
It probably is, to be fair, yeah. I mean, look, we started on the 22nd of June with a blank sheet of paper and a whole heap of mess to clear up. So for us to have been able to rebuild the squad, the club, the infrastructure and everything like that and hit the ground running in the way that we have done, you know, it's not been without hiccups, but nevertheless, we're very pleased with how it's panned out so far.
And I mentioned, you know, a whole new broom. Obviously, not all non-league fans are going to know, but you were previously the chief executive at Leyton Orient. You've been there for many years, and then you've come back under the new regime now. And what's it like being back at a club that means so much to you?
Yeah, do you know what? It's nice, actually. I went to the game on Saturday against Guiseley. It was the first game I'd attended, really, for 2 years at least, and it was just nice to be back and see everybody with smiles on their faces, and it felt like the old place again. You know, they've had a horrific time over the three preceding years. There's no other way of dressing it up. So everybody appreciates, you know, where we are now and the big rebuilding job we've got ahead, but everybody's, you know, batting for the same side and on board with it. We're all in this together, and you know, everybody's gonna you know, I think be quite understanding and accepting. We know that football fans have got high expectations, and that's reality. But nevertheless, Orient fans at the moment understand that, you know, the club's got a long way to go to get back to where it was before.
Dave?
Yeah, Marty. I mean, I would say that not only your own fans, but the vast majority of neutrals will be on your side as well after what you've had to put up with. And we've seen it with not just your own club, other clubs over the years, but that feeling of togetherness now and the bond between the support, the boardroom and the dressing room, it will drive you forward. My question is more a football question. How have you spoke to the manager about how you've settled into the division, about the difference in the league compared to the actual football league? And as for supporters, you know, it's going to be a different sort of year for them going to, I think, is it Saturday year at Boreham Wood, which is a club which has sort of come up through the Ryman as the Isthmian League and then has now finds itself in the conference. So you're going to visit these places, which is a whole new experience. So what's, first of all, the football side of it, if you have any knowledge of it, and then obviously how the supporters are seeing the trips to places they've never been to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, to speak about the supporters side of it, you know, what a lot of people are saying to me is that it feels like we're playing a lot of FA Cup first round matches at the moment. You know, it's how we used to remember it when non-league teams used to come and play us, and it was a relatively big day out for them. And that is not meant in a patronising way whatsoever. It's just the reality of the situation, you know. And
sure,
we have to attune ourselves to say, well, no, we're on the same level as all these other clubs now. And there's nobody at Leyton Orient whatsoever who is walking around thinking that we've got a divine right to win the National League and that we shouldn't be at this level and things like that. You know, what we're saying is, look, we are where we are. We think we can be higher, but we can only be higher if we have the right attitude, treat everybody with respect, and deal with the situation correctly. So we know that for a lot of clubs, coming to Brisbane Road is going to be a big day out. And actually, with the huge number of clubs in and around the M25 in the National League, we're going to be not only attracting some quite big away followings to our stadium, we're going to be taking a lot of people as well. I mean, we've went to Maidenhead the other week, which, you know, obviously isn't far. We've been to Woking already as well, and we're at Boreham Wood on Saturday. You know, and you know, our fans will outnumber the home fans, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be an easy game for us in the slightest. You know, the team will treat Boreham Wood with respect, and they will set themselves up appropriately to try and get the best result they can from the game. Steve Davis is a man who we've brought in to manage the side. He's got a huge amount of knowledge of not only lower football league, but also senior non-league. So he, you know, he's someone who's well aware of the task ahead of us. We've got a lot of players with non-league experience, but also a lot of players with football league experience. So we've got a decent blend, whereas last year it was all kids really in the team, and you know, they were relatively rudderless. We've now got a team that's you know, in a position where there's the right balance and the right blend, and you know, so far they've been able to deliver some decent results. There's been you know, a couple of unfortunate episodes on artificial surfaces, but you know, as I said in a different interview at the weekend, I'm actually in favour of artificial surfaces if they suit the individual club. So I think it's just a coincidence that the two games we've lost so far have been on 3G. But nevertheless, you know, that just highlights another difference of something we have to get used to.
Yes, and to be fair, to build the squad as quickly as you have after how you finished last season, you know, he's done well, Steve Davis, to put together the group he has this quickly, hasn't he?
Well, he has, but to be fair, most of the rebuild in terms of our transfers has been down to Martin Ling, who came in, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before Steve, and actually brought 6 or 7 of those players in himself. You know, every other transfer since Steve come in has been with complete agreement of Steve and Martin. They're working really well together. It's not one of those places where you have a director of football who imposes something on the manager. You know, as Martin always says, he works for Steve and Steve works for him, and they've combined really well. But to be fair, when Martin came in on the 22nd of June with pre-season, 24th of June, with pre-season starting a week away, he already had, because we'd obviously had Martin lined up for the job before, he had 6 or 7 targets, and we moved quickly to sign key players, you know, people like David Mooney, Charlie Lee, who's unfortunately injured. We gave Charlie Granger, our goalkeeper, a new contract. We brought in Jake Caprice and Joe Widdowson, the two fullbacks. You know, we brought in a number of players who would form the basis of our first 11 very quickly, because we knew we were already behind the curve and we couldn't afford to waste any more time that summer. So Steve and Martin between them have really, you know, with the knowledge that they've got and the scouting contacts that they've got, they've really managed to pull out the stops to sign, you know, what we believe to be a decent squad.
Yeah, and just, you know, you've taken me in the another direction. I'm always fascinated by this director of football and manager relationship, Matt. What is theirs and where's the line in the sand, if you like?
Well, the advantage of this relationship compared to some other director of football and first team coach relationships is that Martin hasn't got any desire to be a coach or first team manager any longer. You know, Martin's had career.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was going to say, has absolutely had a great career, so has nothing to prove that way. Yeah.
No, exactly. No, I mean, you know, Martin's managed, you know, I think 4 clubs to, you know, and achieved promotion with Orient and playoffs with other clubs, you know, and where he is in his career now, the strategic overseeing role, bringing together medical, scouting, academy, recruitment and analysis and all those different departments is exactly where he wants to be. And because our owners and principal investors are based overseas, they're not able to, you know, really be in micro contact with the management. So they need somebody they can trust in place to look after that for them and report into them, you know, a couple of times a week and when necessary with the progress report. So Martin's doing that job fantastic. Steve's in complete control at the training ground. Steve picks the team, you know, and he does everything that you would expect from somebody of his experience in that position. So, no, it's great. And touch wood so far, you know, that's all working really well.
One standout player, that Macaulay Bonn, is it 7 goals in 8 games? Is that a bit of talent that Martin spotted, or Steve? Or
yeah, no, Martin brought Macaulay in. I mean, he'd been out on loan a couple of times last year from Colchester and done well. He had a fantastic pre-season, scored loads of goals in pre-season, and then didn't manage to score for the first 3 or 4 games of the new season. And it was, you know, maybe he's a young lad, plenty of enthusiasm, and maybe put a little bit of pressure on himself to deliver. But, you know, as with a lot of centre-forwards, once that first goal comes, the floodgates have kind of opened, and Macaulay's really, really on fire at the moment. Long may that continue.
So what are the realistic expectations this season then, Matt? You know, there's a new set of players, you know, the boardroom, you know, people are still settling into their roles. There's very few that bounce straight back up out of non-league, back into the Football League.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to say, yeah, you know, our expectations are to win the National League. That's unrealistic. You know, what we're going to say is that, you know, with the squad that we've got in place, with the resources and the infrastructure around us, we expect to be somewhere around the playoffs. You know, if we're not, it's not a major disaster, because the rebuilding's a long-term project. So, you know, we've said this could be 3, 4, 5 years to get out of the National League. If it happens any quicker than that, then great. But we're certainly not turning around to everybody and saying, oh, don't worry, everyone, this is fine. We'll only be out in a year or two. You know, we're patient. We're in it for the long term. And we're about building the club as much as we are about building the team. For us, it's about rebuilding the links that Leighton Orient has with the East London an Essex community. It's about making sure the academy is as strong as it can be. It's about making sure our staff are treated properly. It's about making sure that we deliver a good fan experience on a Saturday. And if all of those components come in, into place, as I sort of found when I was chief executive of the club before, you get these perfect storms of seasons where everything works, team, commercial, community, academy, everything falls into place at once. And then when you do that, you achieve success not only as a team, but as a club. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to be a good football club, not just a good football team.
One more from you, Dave.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what he's saying. You'll get it out within your community. How's your gates been, Matt? You know, on average from maybe this time last year?
Yeah, I mean, look, our gates are really strong. We've sold nearly 3,700 season tickets, which, believe it or not, is more than we sold in League One 3 years ago. So, you know, it's, the fans have really bought into the concept of getting behind the team and you know, supporting them in their hour of need, so to speak. So we're averaging over 4,000. You know, obviously the away followings in the National League aren't quite what they were in the Football League. So that actually means we're getting more home fans through the gates to keep the attendances at that level. So, no, we're really pleased with how that's going.
And I think as well, obviously football supporters aren't stupid. They weren't happy with the regime as it was before, and they're now telling you they're buying into what you're doing now. And as I said at the start of the interview, Matt, I think the vast majority of neutrals will be behind you because of what you've had to suffer as a football club.
Yeah, I think we will get that support. You know, I wouldn't want... Perhaps normally the big fish in the small pond doesn't quite get the neutral vote, but I think, as you say, because people know what the football club's been through in recent years, and we're by no means the only one, you know, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of other clubs suffering with mismanagement, but those clubs generally do get support from the wider football family because nobody likes to see even their fiercest rivals being mismanaged in that way. You know, you want to beat a team fairly and squarely on the pitch. You don't want to beat them because they're falling apart as a club. I think, you know, there's a lot of people, rooting for us, and, you know, maybe that'll be the case until near the end of the season. I don't know. But, you know, at the moment, yeah, we're getting a lot of goodwill, which is nice.
Great stuff, Matt. Well, thank you very much for your time. Best of luck for the rest of the season. And I'm sure we'll speak again before the season's out.
Thanks, guys. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, cheers, no, good to interview.
Thanks to Matt Porter, the non-exec director now at Leighton Orient. Steve Davis seems to be a name he likes. Matt involved at Matchroom, who obviously brought Steve Davis, the snooker players. Now Steve Davis, the manager.
Listen, there's only one Steve Davis, and that's the captain of Northern Ireland, as you well know, Tim. So we can move on from that.
Well, maybe we should look out for more Steve Davises and see if we can take one an agency contract. You know how much I love agents. Yeah. Okay, so we've talked much about the FA Cup already this season and the magic it holds for clubs and non-league, but being realistic, none are likely to make it to Wembley in that competition. They might just make it through to non-league finals day, however, and that road to Wembley this season starts this weekend. 619 entries in this season's FA Vars, with 440 clubs in this weekend's first round qualifying. One club in full prep is Wickham FC, up in the northeast of the country, which is a hotbed for success in the FA Vars in recent years. Home to Newton Aycliffe on Friday night, and there's a 7:30 p.m. kickoff, amongst others, at 7:45. That means that theirs is the first match in this season's competition. Joining us on the line is manager at Wickham, Robin Falkus. Good evening, Robin.
Good evening, Tim. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you? How are the preparations going?
They're going very well, thank you. We had a game on Tuesday evening. We didn't train last night. We would normally train on a Thursday night, ready for a Saturday game. But due to we're sharing the pitch with the cricket team, we've got to give Newton Aycliffe, our opponents, the opportunity or the chance to pick which day they want to play, the Friday night or the Sunday, and they've opted for the Friday night. So, yeah, we had a good win on Tuesday night. A tough game and picked up a couple of injuries, but it's continued our winning run to six league wins off the bounce. So it's going really well at the moment.
And I mentioned the 7:30 p.m. kickoff, and you mentioned the cricket club. That's proper non-league, that is. But is that your standard kickoff time, or are you just trying to steal a mark so you're the first game in this year's competition?
No, it's like I said before. We've got to give the away team the choice of which day they want to play the game on, so either the Friday evening or the Sunday. And they've went for the Friday evening in 7:30 p.m. is always our normal kickoff time on a midweek game.
Dave,
hi mate. I'm more interested in sort of the. I'm always interested in managers' thoughts and what the, you know, getting into FA VARs. Obviously, great chance to progress in a really sort of. Get the word out in a really, really magnificent competition. But you've just said you've gone six on the bounce, you know, which must take you top of the league. I haven't got your table in front of me, but you've got to be top of the league or thereabouts, yeah?
Yeah, well, we actually lost our first game. We drew our second game, and then we've won the six, which has took us to third in the league. If we win with two games in hand, because most teams have played 9 and 10 games, it would take us top of the league, yeah. But we'll have a big squad in from the first game of the season to what we played on Tuesday night is changed by six or seven players. That's how crazy it is, you know, through injuries and suspensions and stuff like
really?
That. So the lads have done absolutely fantastic to keep winning with the changes that we've made in the team, you know. So it's just all credit to the players, really.
And Newton Aldcliffe, what do you know about them?
Well, to be honest, Newton Aldcliffe were in the second division about 3 or 4 years ago, and they came from the division below, and they've kind of just went flying up the leagues. And at the time, they were having 200 to 300. 100 people in crowds, and I can remember about 2 years ago playing them in the Durham County Cup when they were in the first division of the Northern League. We're in the second division, and we actually beat them 1-0 away from home in the Durham County Cup. But I know the manager Dino Brown because he was managing last year in our division again for Norton and Stockton, and they've got some good players, you know. Stuart Banks, I know well, is a lad who they signed this year out of the second division, Craig Hutchinson. We got beat away last season against Billingham Town, and he was playing for them, and we got beat 7-0, as I said, and I think he scored 5. He was unbelievable. So he's one to watch, and they've got an old pro in Dan Mellenby, who's a good forward, and a tricky young lad called Kieran Week. So we do know about them in generally in the North East and in the Northern League, you know a lot about the players and the managers and how they play. So then they'll know about us as well, you know, and how I like to set up and what they expect, you know.
Listen, sounds like a good cup tie, but and your own experience of the competition, how far have you gone? You know, how far has your club gone?
Yeah, the club actually won the Vars in 1981, and I believe the year later or the year before, they got to the semi final as well. Back then, there was a guy called Colin Richardson who was a really well known guy in the Northeast. Colin sadly passed away a couple of years ago now, but a lot of that team then I knew because my father used to run football teams, and some of them used to play for him. You know, a lad called Derek Ward. And actually, there's a lad called Billy Corfer who scored the goal. He's guest of honour tomorrow night at the Glebe. So, and personally, with Wickham about 4 seasons ago, we actually won about 6 games in the Vars. We won the extra preliminary round, and we got to the fourth round where we got beat off West Auckland. And they went on to the final, but they got beat off Dunstan, who's our neighbours. Actually, Dunstan and Wickham are only a mile apart. So, yeah, we had a really good experience back then. And, you know, ever since then, I think the lads believe that, you know, anything's possible if you get the right draws and you get a little bit of luck that you can progress. And financially, it's brilliant for a club like Wickham because the lads don't get rewarded financially. They get something at the end of the year. And a lot of teams kind of and other managers think, how the hell do they do it with them, you know, because we do punch above our weight quite a bit, and our record against first division teams in the cup games is remarkable. It's really, really good, you know. So we're confident tomorrow, but we're not overconfident, you know. We know what we've got to do and how hard we've got to work to beat a good Newton Aycliff team.
Yeah, no, it cup competition, prestigious is the word I was looking for earlier on, but cup competitions are I always find them exciting, because you're never employed as a manager to win a cup, you're employed to do well or win leagues. So I always find them exciting, and just listening to you, it sounds as if it's going to be a cracker.
It will certainly be a good game, and I know what we get out of our lads every game. And if they give us 100% and we win, brilliant. If they give us 100% and we get beat, then so be it. You know, at least we'll give it our best shot. But we have a little bit of a slopey pitch, and it's a little bit of a leveler, you know. And you never know on a cold, windy night up at Wigan, because it's pretty high up. Anything's possible, you know. But having said that, you know, we should be very, very confident with the form that we're in, and we know that we can play against these teams, because we generally in pre-season always play teams from the first division, you know, and we always do well against them, and they'll know as well, Newton Aycliffe, what to expect from us. They'll know it'll be a tough game. So we're expecting that a decent crowd as well, with it being a Friday night, you know, in the first one. So it should be a good atmosphere and a good game.
And I mentioned about the northern hotbed in success in the FA Vars. You know, last season's winners, South Shields, before that Morpeth Town, before that North Shields. Do you just breed them differently up there?
It's a funny one. It's phenomenal, really, isn't it, when you look at it? But because we're isolated, you get a lot of very good players who could play higher up the pyramid system. They can't do it because of the travel. They're having to leave work at 2 p.m. They might not get back till 2 a.m. And it affects that. So really, the league, the first division especially, is very, very, very strong. It's a little bit false, really. The lads that are playing in that league shouldn't really be playing there. They could all play at a higher level, but because we're isolated, it restricts the lads through with work commitments and so on. So, you know, but the record from the North East is unbelievable over the last, I think it's probably been since 2012 when Dunstan won it. It's went all the way through to 2017. Sorry, yeah.
Maybe if Dave wants to come out of retirement for management, maybe the North East is where you need to go, Dave.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Robin and people like him would keep me out of a job anyway. No, I'm fine. I'm fine on the golf course. But Robin, I wish you well with it. I really do.
No problem at all. Thank you very much for that.
Appreciate your time, Robin. Thank you very much. I understand you've got to go back to some house renovations, have you? It's tough at the top of non-league. It's constantly good.
It is. I'm currently in my mother-in-law's bedroom speaking to you, because I'm coming around here for my dinners and my teas, because my kitchen's out of use and going back home to sleep.
God, so you don't get that at the top level of the game, do you?
No, you certainly don't.
Thank you very much for your time. Best of luck tomorrow, and look forward to watching you progress as the season goes on. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you very much. Thanks again.
Dave, FA Vars, it is such an important competition to clubs like Robin's Wickham FC. I think there's even the prize money, something around 550 quid for the winners for this round. But even so, if they're not paying their players, that's a massive amount of money for any football club, isn't it?
No, it is, and you know, the money, obviously, listen, the finances are essential to any football club, but just to play in it and to win it. I mean, my old assistant manager at Hendon and Wimbledon and St Albans, John Turner, actually won it with Yedding.
I have heard the stories. I have watched the video. Yeah, I have the program.
Yeah. as you well know, with Gordon Bartley as a manager. And you know, if you ever wanted to light his eyes up, you just have to ask him about it. And he would always joke that he would always say, do you want to see my medal? As if he had it around his neck 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know. And so as a player, as a manager, you know, to go and play in the National Stadium at that level of football, it's enormous. And as a competition, you know, there's three major competitions that the FA run in men's football, and it's the FA Vase, the FA Trophy, the FA Cup. So it is one of them, the Holy Trinity, really, you know.
Now, how many football grounds have you visited, Mr. Anderson?
Or should I ask,
how many clubhouses have you been to? Yeah.
I've been to a few, mate. It has to be, I don't know, I wouldn't hazard a guess, over 30 years it's been a few, yeah.
Now, at non-league, we love to celebrate a groundhopper.
Like
Mr. Ben and his bowler hat, strawberries and cream and queuing wherever we go. Ground hopping is quintessentially British. Or is it? Step forward one Norwegian, who I believe has been to 445 football grounds in England alone. Anders Johansson is not only a ground hopper, but also a border hopper. Good evening, Anders.
Good evening.
Now, there's something about Norwegians and their football. I've got a mate in Oslo, and I've seen top-tier football there. You are a passionate bunch, aren't you?
I guess so, yeah. My generation probably grew up with English football as well. So.
Yeah, there's something a little bit different about, watching your... You know, most people watch their local side, but you're jumping on a plane, going to the middle of nowhere, a stand with a handful of fans, and going to non-league. How did that come about?
Well, it started by, I used to be a Reading fan. I had a friend in Reading who introduced me to Reading. I think it was about 1991. Then, came to a point about, I'd say 2010, where I felt like I was falling out of love a bit with the game, with the modern game. I felt it was being reduced to business and felt it wasn't for me anymore. And by coincidence, I went to watch a non-league game. And I liked it, so I went to another one, and I soon fell in love with the game again.
And, I'm involved with a club called Hayes and Yedding United. Even we have a Norwegian supporters club. We don't have many fans, but good evening to Geir and all the guys that they always come over at least once a season. Is it just that you don't have non-league football? Is that the difference? Is that why Norwegians love non-league so much?
I don't know. It might be. I think the main difference between the match day experience would be that in Norway you won't have a club as bar or something like that. You're not allowed to sell alcohol in connection with sporting events, so therefore they don't have a club as bar or anything. So people have no reason to show up early. While here is more of you get the impression it's a local hub for the community, where people meet. And also if you go below the top two, three divisions in Norway, there'll be clubs, basically not many fans.
Dave, a clubhouse without a bar. I mean, that...
I know. I've just sort of scratching Norway off my list of places to see football grounds. I was going to ask you. Anders. Obviously. The first few you go to is fine, and then you get into a routine, and now you're hundreds of grounds down the road.
Yeah.
How do you now go about selecting where you're going to go next?
Well, I tend to go for the nice classical grounds, and I've got kind of a to-do list that I see people going to a ground, post pictures in there, I like to look at the grounds, or there might be a club a bit curious about. So when I plan these trips, I just make a list of all the fixtures, and I just have a look and see where do I fancy going.
Yeah, and what's the next couple that you're looking to come and see?
I was gonna do Little Town on this trip in the West Riding League, and they again got reversed. So they were playing away. So I didn't get there. So that might be one for my next trip.
I'd imagine Tim that Anders' knowledge of the lower leagues is better than ours.
Certainly, probably knows the grounds better than mine. Than me. Yeah. What's the best thing about turning up to a strange ground then, Anders? Do you have things that you hunt out first? You go and find maybe the club shop, or is it the bar, or is it you're taking snaps of the ground, or what's the first thing on your list when you turn up at a ground?
After Penalty Inn, I always get a programme if there is one, and have a look around the ground, take some pictures, go in the clubhouse bar, get a pint, sit down, have a look, read through the programme over a pint. I used to collect scarves, but obviously they take up a lot of space, and the level I'm watching now, they're more likely to have pin batches, so I swap the pin batches, but try to get a pin batch from every club I go to now.
And when you go, Anders, do you always support the local, the home side, or do you go neutral, or how do you watch the game?
It depends who's playing, really, but sometimes I'll be watching away teams that I have a connection with, where I have friends or something, but so I guess it all depends on who's playing, but most of the times I go as a neutral.
So I understand this is a bit of a job for you now as well, isn't it? Are you writing about your experiences?
Well, I've been the last couple of years I've been I've been writing travel guides to English football for the Norwegian market, and it's been going okay so far, but let's see, I've got a few ideas that I like to see if I can make something out of, but see where it takes me.
Brilliant. And so is there anywhere that listeners can find out more about your travels and your writing?
www.vikinghopper.blog.no, blog with two G's.
Okay, well, listeners can look out for that, and look out for your travels and guide to some of the grounds that I don't even think David and myself have been to.
No, yeah. And I would insist on Anders, insist on getting a free beer if you've travelled that amount of miles.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, best of luck, Anders. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and maybe we'll meet up at a ground in the not too distant future.
Excellent. I'm always amazed, and I know it sounds stupid, but his English is better than mine.
It's certainly better than my Norwegian. Have you ever listened to Norwegian? My mate is originally from England, but he's learnt Norwegian. He's lived out there probably 20 odd years now, and it's great when he's on a tube. And he's just smiling away to himself because he's listening to somebody else's conversation, which is in Norwegian or some other Scandinavian language, because you can tend to work him out. And then he joins in, and the look on people's faces. Languages aren't quite my thing. I'll stick to non-league football. And I think I'll also stick to Anders' approach of a beer seem to be very high up on his list.
He's a proper non-league guy, and but I love stories like that, because he must have spent thousands, Tim, what? Thousands and thousands of pounds, and seen some unbelievable sights in football, really.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the number of miles that I'm covering now. I don't live in the local area for my club, and I'm thinking, well, more petrol this week, more petrol that week, and I mean, Anders is jumping on planes. He's obviously clearly worried about his weight allowance as well now, with going for a pin badge rather than
than a scarf. Yeah,
yeah. A pin badge is allowed in hand luggage. I guess they are. They're not that dangerous, are they?
But I think as well, if you look at it, I mean, when I said what was his next sort of couple of grounds he was looking to go to, I was thinking maybe Bromley, Ebbsfleet, Harborough. But it was way down below that level, wasn't it? Unbelievable.
There must be a listener out there that can plot all of Anders' grounds on some Google Map overlay or something like that, surely. That's the next thing we need to do. Talking of technology, we'll be speaking to a new form of bringing programs alive next on the Non-League Football Show. Now, we just mentioned I love a bit of technology and gadgetry. Mr. Anton, technology not quite your thing?
Listen, I love technology. I'm just useless at it. You know, I'm just, yeah, thankfully, you know, one of the good reasons of having children is when they get to sort of teenagers, you can pull them in and go, how did I do this? How does this work? You know, so, but I do love technology and I'm very interested in what's coming next.
Well, yeah, we love technology, but we also love traditional things, you know, the things that non-league football is especially about. We just spoke to Anders and he was talking about Real Ale and also buying a match day programme. I thought it was a good opportunity to discuss this story about old and new combining. Obviously not the Real Ale. We haven't got that one involved in this one. But the story of Frickley Athletic bringing to life their match day programme with augmented reality. Know where that is, Mr. Anderson?
I haven't got a clue, Tim.
Yeah, well, hopefully Chris Medwell, who's the programme editor at Frickley, can explain a little. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening, Tim.
Now, basically, my understanding, I've used augmented reality or AR, as it's known in the field, a little bit myself. But basically, as a fan, you can have an app on your phone. You hold it over the program as though you're taking a photo, and as if by magic, the page comes alive. Is that it?
That's correct. Yes, you put it exactly how it happens. Download a free app with the Frickley program. You just tap a code in, hover it over the page. There's got a trigger image on, and the football highlights just appear on your phone as if by magic.
And I mean, how do you come up with this idea then, Chris?
I teach young people with learning difficulties, and I've been using augmented reality in my practice for a number of years now. The technology has actually been available for quite some time, and I just thought it would lend itself absolutely perfectly to football, really. This season, I've taken over doing some of the contributing to the programme and editing with a couple of the other volunteers, and we just thought we'd give it a go. It was a trial initially, a bit of a pilot, and it's just absolutely snowballed into something that's great, and it's fantastic for the club. It's fantastic for football, really. Well, hopefully.
Dave, a question?
No, I was just going to say I think it's a great idea because I know that, especially at non-league level, that programmes are fast becoming a thing of the past, and as much as I don't know how you find it your own ground, in your own club, Tim, but people I speak to say that they don't sell as much as they used to. People are talking about doing away with them because it's not worth them going to print. And this is just a brilliant way of giving everyone a lift and something different, you know?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, bringing it to a new audience as well. I love the idea that you've got your students involved as well. It must be great practical experience, and you know, obviously the coverage as well that you've received must be fantastic for them. It must be a great feeling for them.
Oh, it's brilliant. Seeing the journey that some of the young people have taken as well. So we talk about young people with varying degrees of learning difficulties, and as you said, it's a brilliant practical experience for them, and they learn so many softer skills as well. So the end product is filming a football match, and I mean, it's a dream for me doing it. So for a 16-year-old coming into a football club, filming the game, interviewing the manager. I mean, we went to Sheffield United's Bramall Lane at the end of last year and filmed the Sheffield and Hallamshire Senior Cup, and it was just a fantastic experience for them. So, like you said, the coverage that they've got from this project as well, it's just so rewarding. So we've got to thank Frickley for sort of allowing us to do that and joining forces to have a really strong partnership as well.
Having been involved in the media team at a non-league football club for over 20-odd years, we've got a bigger team and we've got a great team, but yeah, always extra help, always is always fantastic. And it's also, you know, great to see a lot of people then you know, just gaining so much confidence in going into the wider world just by, as you say, doing an interview with a manager, filming those sort of skills. Is this a project that's going to continue throughout the season and sort of next as well?
Yes, of course, and I hope it can grow. One of the young men in particular, I remember when he started at the college, he had an ambition to be a stadium announcer, and a lot of people sort of said, we need to think of realistic goals, realistic dreams and outcomes. And a couple of weeks ago, he had a go at stadium announcing at Westfield Lane. So, you know, what a fantastic opportunity for him, and also for the club, just sort of extending out into the community. Hopefully, Dan, the young man, will go on to do something at another non-league club, or maybe even higher. He's certainly demonstrated that he can do that. So the opportunity is out there for him.
Brilliant stuff. Well, having been forced into the stadium announcer and PA and everything in the past, you know, that takes a little something to. It's not one of those. It's a bit like the secretary's job. I've done it, but I'm not sure I'd want to do it full time. But
he revelled in it. He absolutely revelled in it. So good for him.
Yeah, but I tell you as well, Tim, I think this is the way forward. I think this could be, you know, you could actually have a program for kids who go to games, you know, so that when they hover it over, they get something different. You know, there's a million things you can do with this. This is like something you could turn up at Old Trafford in a few years' time, and this is the way the program will be. I think it's a brilliant idea.
I think I actually saw, was it a Division 1 or Division 2 club sort of claiming that they were the first in football with this, and then I think Chris's team were there already. Non-league beat the pros at their own game.
Again.
Exactly, and it is. It's these young people. It's trying to re-engage the audience, the fan base, and young people are immersed in that technology anyway. So, and I am a football traditionalist. You did mention that at the beginning. Non-league clubs are often bound to run programs. So, what a good way of keeping it alive. And we've got big plans for the future. Some other sort of features in there, interviews, it's like exclusive content. So fans buy the program, because people have pointed out that, well, highlights are available on YouTube channels, not for everybody, but for some. So it's about taking it and running with it and making it fresh and keeping those ideas going and having the creative mind to go and do that.
I've probably been guilty of it myself. You know, there's normally not enough hands on deck to do all the jobs you need to do at non-league. But, you know, bringing in, you know, college students that are already itching to go and getting some experience, it's almost a no-brainer. But maybe you're the first and you're leading the way, Chris.
Oh, I'd like to think so. I hope so.
How's the season going anyway, program apart at Frickley? You've stolen all the headlines with the program. What about on the field?
it's been a good start. Frickley there's been quite a number of changes since last season. Unfortunately, the club were relegated from the Eversleigh Premier down to the Eversleigh Division 1 South. But we've started brightly. Two great games in the league over the past two home games, both scoring 5 goals. So onwards and upwards. I know the people who've come in to the board, Ryan McKnight, they've got great ideas. Spencer Fearns, the new manager, and the team seems to be playing excellent football. I hope when they gel, I hope they've started to gel, and five goal maulings are the future for the rest of this season, and hopefully a successful promotion season back up to where we belong, really.
Five goal mauling, so that means more editing for the highlight package, isn't it?
Actually, it does, but it's much more pleasurable experience for myself and for the young people editing 5-0, 5-1 wins than defeats. I can tell you that.
I've always found the manager's interviews a bit easier as well post match on those ones.
Of course. Of course, of course.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Chris. Brilliant project. Wish you luck for the rest of the season on and off the field. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Dave, I mean, that's the future of non-league, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's a brilliant idea. I'm not kidding you. I think it's a brilliant idea. You're going to have to show me how it works, though. But I think it's a brilliant idea. And it combines the tradition with obviously today's social media and all mobile phones, and I just think it's a really good idea.
Or maybe the non-league show becomes interactive. Yeah, lots of irons and fires and plans coming. But that's it for this week. Don't forget, non-league day is fast approaching, 7th of October. We'll be covering more about that in coming weeks. But do get in touch with details of how your club is getting behind the initiative, and we'll try and promote some of those. And if your club hasn't thought of that yet, then check out www.nonleagueday.co.uk for ideas on how you can get involved. So just to round off, a big thank you to Dave Anderson for holding my hand this time.
It's pleasure.
It's been a fun ride. And in the meantime, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, also on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. Goodbye.
JABBA
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.